Listen to me. Oh, oh, I despise. Cause it means destruction of innocent lives. War means tears to thousands of mothers die when their sons go off to fight and lose their lives. I said war. Good God, y'all.
What is it good for?
I absolutely.
Now
get sad again.
War.
Slap on your fatigues and your face paint, because it's going down. We are definitely going to war. From Saudi Arabia to Paducah. Holy shit, I need my bazooka. Greetings and salutations, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Pod Is War. Pod Is War is brought to you by the good folks at ChairShot Radio Network in conjunction with...
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
I need to use my head and take a breath and calm down. You see, I'm excited, man. I'm pumped and ready to go right now. I'm actually talking before I'm thinking, which, depending on who you ask, that's how I do it anyway. But anywho, make sure you all use your head in these war times and go to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. Pick up your official ChairShot t-shirts. We've got the old school designs. We've got new school designs. We've got Baron Corbin's Sucks commemorating Mr. King Corbin, whose outfits have been awesome, BT Dub. We've got Jesus Did the Job. We've got a brand spanking new shirt that I just saw on Twitter today, which is Journalism, which I think that's kind of a cool shirt. Cool design, right? Anywho, show us some love, man, in these war times, all right? Go to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. Please and thank you, and please. Folks, I'm Mr. Velvet Pipes, Christopher Platt. As always, I'm joined by Mr. Andrew Snowflake Belaz.
Woo! Yeah! Whoa! Good God, you all. Yeah.
No? No? Okay, we're not going to pronounce the you all? Okay.
It's called soul, man. You don't know anything about that.
I mean, I eat soul food. Does that count for anything?
Hey, man, chicken tenders do not count as soul food, sir.
I mean, if I put them in, like, some hot sauce, is that not good?
No. If it doesn't have bones, leave it alone.
I like that. But, oh, also, just an update on the shirt. I'm pretty sure you have to say the hashtag in front of it, because that's part of the whole gimmick that the Greg DeMarco show does when they decide to take the piss out of some of the hashtag journalism kind of reports that come out there. So it's hashtag journalism, just as a kind of little bit of a dig on shitty people like Meltzer's half-assed shit and Brad Shepard and that shit.
Well, thank you for the update. I truly do appreciate it. So if you all do want to pick up the hashtag journalism shirt, again, go to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. And the third man in this concerto is Mr. Moderator himself, the Commissioner, PC Tunney.
Bro.
Reporting for duty, sir.
Well, guys, let's not lollygag and pussyfoot around, man. Let's get right into it. We are recording this on a Wednesday night on the... What's the word I'm looking for? The first firing shots in the Wednesday Night Wars have just ended. We did something a little interesting. I don't know if we're going to continue to do this, but we did it tonight. So I unfortunately wasn't able to watch any of the shows live. Unfortunately, rent takes precedent over pro wrestling. Not in my world, but, you know, try to be homeless.
You really like musicals, buddy, huh?
I'm just saying, man, try to be homeless and maintain a girlfriend. I don't think that's
I always preferred
well.
Phantom of the Opera as opposed to Rent, but, you know, whatever takes precedence in your life, bud.
I think Phantom of the Opera might have been about the only musical I liked. I like Phantom of the Opera, and oddly enough, I really dug Oklahoma, which is kind of weird.
Really?
That
is a little odd.
Yeah, but it was cool, man. I don't know why. It was cool.
You were going to say, like, Carnival or Sound of Music, which is weird. But Oklahoma takes the cake on that one, too. Okay. Fucking A.
And I don't know, would Disney, would Wizard of Oz be considered a musical?
It's Disney-ish, but, yeah, I mean, there's music in it.
Okay, well then I would go Wiz, Oklahoma.
Wiz definitely is, yeah.
Yeah, so I would go the Wiz, Oklahoma, and what was the first one you said? Phantom of the Opera.
That's good. No love for South Pacific. You don't have a thing for Glenn Close?
No, man, not since Fatal Attraction, man. She played that role too damn well.
That's a good point. She went on that one.
She's too good of an actress. God damn. She done boiled somebody's bunny before. That bitch is a bunny boiler.
Maybe she's the one that killed Bray Wyatt's bunny at the Firefly Funhouse, you know?
He's died twice now. So, like, how many lives do rabbits have? Like, Cat's got 9. Do rabbits have more than 2?
Well, he's basically the Kenny of the Firefly Funhouse. That's how that works.
I like that. Okay.
Yeah.
He's also trying to be the whistleblower on top of it, so that's just weird.
No, what's weird is his Johnny Bravo body, because he got, like, super svelte, and he looks, like, really stacked up top, but he still got them skinny-ass legs.
We talking just Bray in general?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, my God. That was a little bit of a needed a segue, but I followed enough. All right. Cool.
So, guys, man, let's get into this, man. So, I believe, Mr. Belaz, you checked out the NXT show this evening. Is that correct?
Primarily correct.
And obviously, there was a lot of channel changing and back and forth. And, Mr. Tunney, you were primarily focused on the AEW show. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. On the large television directly in front of me was AEW for the entire 2 hours. And then on my mobile device right next to me here without sound was NXT. So I was able to follow along with both. But in honor of the inaugural AEW Wednesday Night Dynamite on TNT, first time since 2001, TNT Wrestling. And I was notified of that many a time by the announce team from AEW, apparently. That was my setup this evening.
Well, guys, let's get into it, man. I don't know which one of you want to start, or if we just kind of want to go back and forth, or let's break it down like a compound fraction.
Balls, what do you think? We kick it off with AEW tonight, first episode ever. I know we talked about the fact that...
In deference to the fact that it's AEW's historical number one, sure, let's go.
All right, well, what the hell?
Oh, God.
Just for Platt. So they kick the show off. It looked great in the arena. Their entrance ramp and their Titantron, if you will, whatever, was very nice. It all seemed very much a renewal of WCW to me. You had Tony Schiavone, Jim Ross, and boy, oh boy, what was the guy? Excalibur. I remembered. Good for me, I remembered. Woo, thank goodness. and I thought the announce team was nice. I think they're going to get even better with time. Schiavone and Ross obviously have chemistry. I enjoyed Schiavone being back at the announce team. I love the setup. Max Holiday had mentioned on the Twitter that he thought it looked like an 18-foot ring, and I replied, if it was, I didn't miss the 2 extra feet. And it would only make sense for AEW to have a slightly smaller ring, considering they don't have a ton of gigantic athletes in their roster currently or what they've shown. But the kickoff looked good. The production value looked good. Everything looked good. The first match, Cody Rhodes and
Sammy Guevara.
Yes, I was trying to remember how to pronounce his last name correctly. But I thought it was a great match. It was probably their best match of the evening. And why not have Cody Rhodes come out and get the first victory on AEW? Andrew, what were your thoughts on all the aesthetics, though, that I mentioned?
Aesthetically?
Oh, my God. I apologize, guys. I just saw Riho damn near get killed. She tried to backdrop Nyla Rose.
And her leg crumbled, well, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it looked, did she fall on her head, or is she just selling really well?
She's tiny, so she might have fallen on her head, but she's also pretty good at what she does. I'll give her credit. She's been in the game for like 13 years. She looks 13 years old, but she's she's like a 13-year veteran.
So she's been competing in the rings since she was an infant. Like, she came out the womb, and her parents threw her into the ring. That's what you're telling me.
Very nearly. That's how Japan works. Most of the girls start somewhere between like the age of 10 and 13, normally. And so a girl could be 20 and have 10 years of ring experience.
So one thing that Tunney said, Andrew, that I wanted you to touch on a little bit, because I know you've got your own thoughts and whatnot, but It sounds to me like they were really steering into the skid in terms of this WCW thing, because PC brought up the ring size looked like an 18-footer, and I believe that was WCW's ring size as well, wasn't it? And then you've got, obviously, Jim Ross and Tony Schiavone, and they start off their broadcast with the Rose wrestling, you know?
Oh, yeah, and even after the match when Schiavone went into the ring for the interview, you could see Cody got emotional just because either of the weight of the night or the dynamic and all that other stuff. So, yeah, they really steered into that WCW comparison skid. But then they still also got the double tunnels like TNA used to do. So they're kind of picking and choosing from things that aren't WWE, but things that are still very well known to the hardcore fans. So it looked nice. Granted, there was a lot of pockets of empty chairs. I don't know if Tunney noticed that when he was watching, but it looks like the scalper kind of issue that people talked about did hurt the when they panned out. Not the initial, because everything looked pretty full from like the initial ring view and most of what you saw. But as they panned around, you saw like fairly decent pockets of two or three rows of being empty chairs, like within probably like floor or slightly above floor seating.
You know, I hate that became a thing this week, that people were bragging on them because the scalpers got all the tickets. Because, I mean, come on, y'all. You get your nuts off the ground and pick them up now, because that happens in every form of entertainment. It happens with WWE. It happens with concerts. It happens with sporting events. The scalpers always get to the tickets first. Why the hell do you think that you go on StubHub or Vivid Seats or SeatGeek and the seat is $100, but by the time you get to all the fees and whatnot, you paying $5.45 for the goddamn ticket? That's how this works. Like, that's not just an AEW thing. That's just life.
I think the weirdest thing I saw was on Twitter, where somebody posted a picture of it and they said that the security wouldn't let them move forward. I don't know why they wouldn't fill out better, like move some people from the cheap seats, so to speak, to fill in the gaps and just make the overall presentation look a little better. That's a little goofy to me, but you know, that's neither here nor there. You're still correct, where people are going to try to make a buck off of anything. So fuck, scalpers are a thing.
And PC, I'm sure there were some, not everything went smoothly, because, I mean, literally nobody's ever done this before. So there's going to be some hitches in the giddy up along the way.
Yeah, you know, obviously the overall show should get better as they move forward. I don't know that I necessarily like the way that they kind of run their show as far as production goes and planning and match wise and everything else. But it's something new. It's something different. I am a WWE guy, but all in all, I thought they did a really good job of presenting what they had. They did have a couple of interesting things happen in the last match. But at the same time, you know, I probably would have been much better off just watching NXT.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, of course, the show and the company that has been running shows for the last, 40, 50 years is going to be better at running a show than a company that is running their first television show. And that, you know, I'm not shitting on anybody. That's just, you know, them's the facts. One thing that I noticed about the pay-per-views, and I want to know if this bled into television, is that they had pacing problems. And number one, every match doesn't have to go 20 minutes. Like, you know what I mean? You got to have some squash matches. You got to have some popcorn matches. Every match it can't be that, you know? And they also sometimes they'll have some camera problems, like they'll linger on shots too long, or, you know, they'll cut away before the actual move happens, or they'll just have a bunch of dead air that they're forcing the announcers to have to fill because they didn't time it out properly.
I didn't see a lot of that happening. I thought everything went pretty seamlessly. But what I could tell, and getting back to the dynamic of two things happening at once here in the beginning of the Wednesday Night War, et cetera, They both just played their shows against each other. Neither one of them went, well, I'm just going to do what we're going to do and they can adjust to it. They both kind of looked at what the other person was going to do and everything synced up to what happened. NXT went another 15 minutes, whereas AEW ended right at 9 o'clock. WWE didn't have to do what they did in kind of making it the same way, because I'm, from what I remember, the women's matches happened at the same time. The opening, they put the title match up against Cody and the opening match. And then the finish was the two kind of the six man and the tag match. So everything kind of synced up and they said, hey, you choose and we'll figure it out tomorrow.
So two things things that I'm noticing as I'm watching the replay here live in the Living Color. Why did Nyla Rose just powerbomb comedian Joe Coy? That was kind of odd. And it looked like they were kind of it looked like they were kind of teasing a Kenny Omega Nyla Rose program there. As he came out and made the save as Riho was getting the break speed off of her because Nyla was mad because she lost.
I don't think that's so much a Kenny-Nyla thing that could end up being an intergender match because Kenny and Riho have been tag partners for like a decade. Like she was his preferred tag partner in intergender matches back when he was in DDT and all that other stuff. So this is just him protecting his girl, essentially, and Nyla's the big monster who tried to beat the shit out of everybody. So I don't think it's going to be Kenny versus Nyla because I don't know if they want to go into that kind of realm of having the women's division wrestlers face the men's wrestlers.
One thing I didn't like, you bring that up, is how Kenny came out there. Is I understand what they did with the opening match and then ending up having Jericho, you know, come out at the end of that opening match and start that whole feud on television for the people that haven't watched the shows before. And the fact that they brought it full circle at the end with Sammy and Hager, we'll get into, kind of seeming like Jericho has his own little clique there. But they took away from the fans in attendance and people on TV that didn't really exactly know what was going on with AEW. They took away the entrance of Chris Jericho and Kenny Omega because you had seen both of them before they had come out in their entrances to wrestle. And I didn't necessarily like that.
I didn't like that you bring that up. I didn't like the fact that a lot of their bigger matches had some schmoz during or at the end. Like the Jericho beatdown on Cody lasted a little too long, in my opinion. Like it just felt a little much. It was to tie in Guevara at the end. I got how it all worked together.
Well, and they took it through the commercial break too. They took it through the commercial break too. They went to picture in picture, and they made that last all through the commercial break. Which
it just felt like it went a little long. And then I hated how they did the last match, the fucking main event. I could not tolerate any second of that with the obvious Moxley interference right in front of the referee, and then the ref just kind of stands there. Like, I understand referee's discretion, but when you have a seventh person come in and start beating the shit out of somebody and you take him out of the match, what the fuck?
Right.
Who doesn't call for a DQ there?
Yeah, I kind of was wondering that. I didn't want to nitpick at that, but the two things I'll take away from it was, one, you know, that is part of it, but Moxley giving Omega the big DDT onto the glass coffee table, yeah, was pretty sweet in the back. If you hadn't caught that, Platt, you'll see that eventually here as you're watching as we go.
Well, it's part of that problem too. Is that why would you continue the match in the ring and then have 5 minutes of following Moxley and Omega through the crowd and into the back and into the lounge area and then the smash of the table and then we get a commercial break or whatever? You're taking the attention away from the audience everywhere. And it was just really, really awkward. And I didn't really like it at all.
So they had too much going on at one time and it was hard to keep up. I guess that kind of ties into what I was talking about earlier about how sometimes the camera is out of position and they miss things that they should be getting. But it sounds here like they just had too much going on and there was no way to kind of, you know, watch it all simultaneously.
Correct. One thing I will definitely put them over heavy for, from what I noticed flipping back and forth, I loved the way commentary worked. I loved how Shivani is kind of the segue between Excalibur and Jim Ross when Excalibur's explaining something or he kind of takes more of a younger angle to it and Shivani's hip enough that he can make it make sense to Ross and then Ross will come back with a joke. Like they were talking about the D&D stuff when Cutler and MJF were in there and Excalibur's talking about, you know, D&D muscles and then one of them made a joke like, oh, there's muscles and like D20 muscles. And he's like, well, unless you use a dice tower. And then you just had Jim Ross go, let's talk about that in our next production meeting or something like that. And it was a good way for them to kind of all get together like that. And I completely loved Jim Ross explaining to the viewing crowd, don't go away when we go to commercial because we're going to have picture in picture. Like he hit that twice before the commercial break came up to be like, don't change the channel because we're going to commercial, because you'll still be able to see what's going on.
Well, that was interesting that they had all three of them out there together, because I was thinking, you know, prior to the show that they were going to do similar to Nitro, where the second hour would come and they would change the announce team. But, I mean, it sounds like you guys didn't have too many complaints about the announcers. Was Jim Ross as curmudgeon as he is on all the other AEW shows? Because sometimes he just comes across like, I'm not feeling this shit, man.
The announce team was probably one of the better parts of their entire show tonight, if I'm, you know, going to rate things for them this evening.
I agree 1,000%. Like, just the addition of Shivani to act as that bridge between curmudgeon old Ross and younger Marky dorky, whatever the hell you want to say Excalibur's kind of gimmick is, it worked really well, and Ross has respect for Shivani. Shivani was respectful to everything. It was nice. I liked their dynamic.
So how did Santana and Ortiz, formerly known as LAX, how did they come across? Did the crowd know who they were? Did they get a good response? As you guys know, I'm a huge LAX fan, but Conan was such a huge part of that team. I don't know how they're going to do this without him, quite frankly.
Maybe not as much as they have in the past when they're under their old banners, etc. But obviously it's a great place for them to come in and be a part of what Jericho's doing. Like I said, they closed the show with those two. Sammy, good God, if I could ever remember his last name, Guevara. There you go. And Hager kind of filling the ring as if to say, well, there's this group that's the Elite slash. And Dustin Rhodes showed up too, by the way, and got his ass beat after kind of coming out and saving Cody a little bit. But you kind of formulate this group of, you have the Elite, Cody, and Dustin. And then on the other side, there's Jericho, formerly LAX, Hager, and Sammy. I remembered his last name, Guevara.
Yes. The bubbly horsemen, as I put them.
The bubbly horsemen. I like it.
It was very interesting to see Jericho kind of pulling the strings and, you know, making sure it all happened. Santana and Ortiz, everybody knew who they were. They did well. They pulled off a couple interesting moves. You know, they did their kind of thing. But I think they're just going to be part of the bigger picture. Like I said, bubbly horsemen, that I'm going to try to start getting that over, because, you know, that just struck me as soon as I saw them.
So what do you like better, the bubbly horsemen or the Napa Valley Five?
How about the Champagne Club?
Well, Champagne, okay, that's a little too take off a bullet club. Yeah, Napa Valley Five seems a little too smart, though, right there. Yeah,
that's true. Champagne Mafia, or is that too much? Is that too TNA?
Like Main Event Mafia?
Yeah.
Mafia?
Champagne Crew, or they're probably not cool enough to come up with that name.
How about the Bubbly Benefactor?
The Bubbly what?
The Bubbly Benefactor.
Who's the benefactor? Like, is Ted DiBiase going to come out and he's financing this whole thing?
Well,
the Bubbly Crew, the Bubbly Brothers.
At some point, Khan comes out, you know, and he's like, yeah, this is my guys. I just use the Elite.
That would actually be interesting, but then we don't really need a heel authority figure again. That just reeks too much of WWE.
It does, but I'm showing my age here, but what if on one of these episodes, Cody or somebody is going for the title and Tony Khan comes out and screws him and hits him with the belt or something, and they go off the air with the fallen baby face, you know, bleeding from the head, just sitting in the ring on his knees yelling, Khan! Khan!
Cody Khan! Already came out in Star Trek gear, so you know that's going to happen at some point.
I love it. I love it.
That's fantastic, and yet I do what I don't want to see, you know what I mean? It's a good gimmick, though. I think this is all going to end up with Moxley eventually solidifying a babyface turn. Like, him and Omega are going to have their big angle. They're going to have some kind of blow-off. And then Moxley's going to eventually help out Omega and the Elite to fight against Jericho's group. I think that's kind of where they're going to go with that.
So did they do enough to bring people back next week? Because I'm assuming they're going to do a pretty good number tonight. But did they leave them with enough of a cliffhanger that will make people want to tune back in?
Wow. I, you know,
yeah, that's a loaded question, Matt.
Because they're gonna, okay. they're going to lose ratings for a while, and they're going to be on a downward spiral until they're kind of going to plateau to where they should be, and then I think gradually they'll come back up as they build. Because let me tell you, their women's division is poor at best, and they're young, and there's very immature storylines, and there's not a lot of deep nested roots for them to fall back on. It's all build right now. There's no go back and circle around and come back to things that have happened and use that in storyline. It's all fresh, new, taking things from other places and still making them their own. So they're going to have a big number. They're going to have a smaller number next week and the week after, but it's still going to be a bigger number than they're going to end up at once they level off until they start to go back up again.
And I'm glad you brought that up, Tony, because, yeah, this is a, you know, we make fun and we poke and we say the war started, yada, 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 yada. But, I mean, this is apples to orangutans. They've got a lot of work to do. It's cool that there's wrestling on TNT and USA simultaneously. Obviously, we're going to mark out for that. But I think how long did it take before Nitro really hit? It took until Scott Hall made that appearance, and then they started to get stuff popping. So they, you know, they're only one big-ass angle away, but I don't know. And here's the Moxley interference. He just came in the ring, and the ref's just looking at him and not doing anything. So I see what you're saying.
That's so stupid. Like, you can only take referee's discretion so far with that kind of crap. They should have ref-bumped him or something. Jesus Christ.
But they need names, man, and you know, they need names. That's the bottom line. And obviously, eventually, if they're able to hold on and maintain, people from WWE are going to be let out of their contracts, or their contracts are going to expire. So maybe they can get some big name talent. Maybe they'll be able to lure a couple of big names, and this thing can actually just kind of pick up some steam and some momentum. All I keep thinking, man, as I'm sitting here watching this, is they really dropped the ball with CM Punk. Because I feel as if they had the money, and I don't know how they tried to woo him and pursue him, but clearly it wasn't to his liking.
Fuck him. He's kind of a diva. Every time he talks, like, it's always something pretentious, or it wasn't to his liking, or someone did this, or someone didn't do that. He's such a whiny bitch. Like, I know why most of the fucking, you know, IWC Twitter generation likes him, because all he did was whine every time he got on the microphone, and that's all people do when they pick up their fucking Twitter fingers. So, like, he's a perfect fucking, you know, fucking exemplary fucking hero for the fucking Twitter generation.
Okay, fair enough. But other than Cena, Rock, and probably Ric Flair, how many top guys have not been divas in this game? That's just kind of what this is, whether good or bad, right or wrong.
Roman doesn't seem like he's much of a diva.
Roman's not also isn't in that class as of yet. No disrespect to him. But
I know what I mean. Yeah.
Okay, that's fair. I'll give you that.
When you get to, like, the building kind of angles, like, okay, for American wrestling currently, Roman doesn't seem like he's a diva. Okada doesn't seem like he's a diva, because he seems like he's just real laid back and goes along with whatever fuck happens. And, shit. I'm like, you got a good point that most of them are kind of egotistical, full of themselves, diva mentality.
So now they're fighting back in what looks like the VIP section of somebody's house. I was going to say a club until I saw the coffee table that apparently Kenny's
here
about
comes
to get
the DDT. Yep.
But yeah, it's they're fighting in somebody's man cave. What the hell, man? Good spot though.
This apparently was a backstage VIP area, so you know.
But that also took attention away from the ring for the match that they didn't disqualify. And then, see, that also made the run-ins at the end feel stupid to me, because why would Cody and Dustin run in for saves when they could have run in to take Kenny's place? Because referees' discretion's allowing one of your main eventers to get dragged out fucking through the crowd and put through a table, referees' discretion could also allow for an alternate.
Okay, now we're nitpicking, so maybe it's time to head over to NXT and see what's going on.
Yeah, we could.
I'm not saying that you're wrong with any of you all's critiques, and obviously I haven't been able to watch the whole show yet, so I probably agree with everything that y'all are saying. I'm just still on a euphoric high, and I think it's cool. This whole week is cool, and we're going to get to some other stuff that's happening later on in the week as well, and some stuff that's already happened in this week. But we got to talk about NXT, which they basically put a takeover on USA. They had limited commercial interruptions. They gave you three title matches. And I oversaw that Finn Bálor actually came out during AEW's, was it their first commercial, if I'm correct?
Yes, it's that first segment, whatever you want to call it.
So, Andrew, man, go ahead and drive the car, man. You watched this show. What did you think?
NXT hit the fucking home run, hit the ball out of the park. The fact that they started with the title match with Riddle and Cole.
Versus?
Oh, come on, bro.
Damn it, Tony. You have stuff for both of them. Come on. Okay. So the fact they started with that and that went a little longer than Cody's match, and just like you said, then they bring Finn out, that completely kind of stole the attention away from whatever the hell AEW was doing. Because by the time I flipped over just at a lull, like when the match was over, then we were at like the Jericho beatdown. So like the match wasn't even going on as long as NXT's match was, but the segment, the whatever the hell you want to say was. But yeah, I mean, NXT did that. Then they even had like time fill matches, like Gargano versus what, Shane Thorne? Was that one of them? And like that went up against, I think, Hangman and Pac, and it's just that was a push.
Number one, shout out to NXT and WWE in general. You know, perfectly timing Finn Bálor coming out during the commercial break.
It also felt like they were timing out AEW show better than AEW was. And I mean that with the fact that the women's title match started about 5-6 minutes before AEW's women's title match. And, you know, they had the 15-minute runover. So you had the Street Profits and Undisputed Era main evented opposed to the six-man, but they had the extra time. So you could kind of choose if you wanted to go back and forth, but just everything kind of just sunk the hooks in a little bit at the right point in time, like when they were on commercial or when they were in between matches. Like you'd go to NXT and, you know, Damian Priest was in the ring, or they started like Io Shirai was actually the second match, the one after the freaking title match, which how do you not love Io? It was like Io and Mia Yim, and you just go from one fan favorite to another, and they just snowballed things really, really nicely.
It sounds like they did, man, because I didn't realize that the Street Profits and the Undisputed Era closed the show, which that had to be purposely done as well, because AEW is priding themselves on being all-inclusive, but yet NXT was the show that had two brothers main event. You know what I mean? Like, that was a deliberate choice, I'm sure.
That's a good point. Yeah, I can't argue with that at all. But, yeah, so I don't know exactly what you want to know regarding the NXT stuff, but the matches were all solid. The Shayna Candice match wasn't bad. Riddle and Cole, I probably have to go watch it again just to pay a little more attention, because it was a really, really good match, but I was still trying to flip back and forth through the low points because AEW is still on its first show, so I kind of wanted to pay it a little more attention. But yeah, just good matches, good flow, good timing on every little stupid thing.
And I saw Matt Riddle and Adam Cole wrestle in a house show match, and ironically enough, it was also the opening match of that house show. A really good match. Obviously, Adam Cole had really good heat. Matt Riddle is cool, and it was very physical. Like, they beat the shit out of each other, and it started off kind of slow, but they got the crowd into it by the time it was, you know, it was over with. So yeah, I'll be interested to go back and see how they've improved, and you know, how the match comes across on television, because live I thought it was pretty good. You know, it wasn't the greatest match in the history of wrestling, but it was a pretty damn good opener.
Yeah, this was right on par with that too then, because it wasn't like the best match of the year, but especially for an opening TV match, it was really fucking good.
And, you know, obviously WWE is going to be better at timing out their shows and whatnot, because they just have more experience. That's just it is what it is. There were no illusions going into this. And this thing is just starting, man. It's going to pick up steam. As Tony said, eventually it's going to plateau and everything's going to even out until I don't know what happens. That's the great thing. I really don't know what's going to happen here. Tony, did you get a chance to check? How much of the NXT show did you get to check out, and what were your initial thoughts coming out of it?
None of the sound, because, like I said, I had AEW up on the TV with just the visual going on from NXT. obviously watching it, I could tell the matches were better. But at the same time, they have an advantage with a head start, working for years as a brand, and then having this roster together much longer than that AEW roster, you know, needs to congeal and things of that nature. But NXT is just a gem right now. It's probably the number one brand in the world. If you want to account everything into the fact, it's not oversaturated. It has quality matchups all the time, regardless of whether it's a pay-per-view or not. Just because those pay-per-views are so far and few in between, you can do nights like this, and it doesn't seem like you're just pulling out all the stops for nothing just because AEW's on. So, I don't know. The one advantage AEW is going to have moving forward, to me, is the announced team, but NXT just continues to knock it out of the park. And we haven't even, we've mentioned Finn Balor, we haven't even brought up the fact that Tommaso Ciampa showed up on NXT television tonight.
Oh, yeah. Think about that. This was a good post from someone on Twitter. I forget what it was, but they posted basically the closing moments of each show, and AEW's like last shot was just a zoom in on Jack Swagger, Jake Hager's face, whatever you want to call him, where NXT's final moments was a zoom in on Adam Cole and Tommaso Ciampa staring each other down. Which one makes you want to tune in next week?
Okay, so what I'm hearing is that NXT won the Lex Luger Make the Splash spot of the night. And Andrew, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I don't know about you, Tutty, but you know what I'm talking about,
but the sad thing is Jack Swagger just reeks of Lex Luger, though, doesn't he?
No, man.
Shut, you left, which means you kind of agree.
So you think Lex is a top guy? Oh, shout out to Cody, man, rocking his Louboutins. I got a pair of those. But you know, Lex Luger was a top guy, man.
So you think instead of having it in Washington, D.C., they should have had this at the Mall of America, their opening debut episode for AEW?
I think it would have been better.
They probably
should have had a nice white button down, too, instead of like his little crew top fucking T-shirt or whatever it was. Yeah.
They should have had it either in Atlanta or, you know, in the home base, which is Jacksonville.
And Nation's Capital isn't a horrible place. I mean, they sold that building out. So, I mean,
you're touche. Now I'm nitpicking, and there goes Jack Swagger, a.k.a. Jake Hager, beating up, I guess, Red Dust. Is that what we were going to call Red Velvet Cake Dust? I don't know.
You know what's actually going to be really great for AEW now that you just brought up the whole home base thing and just thinking about how they could cross-brand the Jaguars and AEW? Gardner Minshew is his own kind of like cult of personality in NFL. Wouldn't that just be awesome? Wouldn't people pay or at least pop hard and it would get viral fucking video retweets and all their stuff if Minshew was involved in not an angle per se, but like on TV for some reason?
Yeah, I could actually see that happening, you know, assuming he's a fan. And if he's not a fan, I'm writing your checks, bitch. You do what I want.
Well, next. Yeah, that's kind of where I'm going. It doesn't matter if he likes it or not. Just if the boss says it, you do it.
Next week on Pod is War, Andrew will be here with a mustache, headband, crop top, and jean shorts.
I could totally Uncle Rico this shit. Don't make me do it.
I mean, that's all Minshew is. He's a ripoff of Uncle Rico. Hey, come over here to Jacksonville. Watch me throw this football over a mountain.
Your mom went to college. I know that ain't Rico, but it's still.
It's just so great the memes that have come out with him. Like, I think my favorite one is Gardner Minshew had a great game. He threw 34 out of 31, 4 touchdowns and a home run. Like, it's like just Chuck Norris shit, but all over again. And it's just, he's more endearing than Chuck Norris, in my opinion.
Hey, man, Chuck Norris has been doing this shit for, what, 40, 50 years? Gardner Minshew has had, what, 2 games? Come on, man.
Texas Ranger, though. So
what's your favorite Chuck Norris joke?
That he fought Bruce Lee competitively in a movie.
Nah, you've heard all the Chuck Norris jokes, right?
I think the only one I've actually liked is the one where he doesn't do push-ups, like the he pushes the earth down or something like that. Yeah, that's, like that one I'm okay with.
That's one of my favorites. I think my all-time favorite is Chuck Norris got a waitress pregnant in Kalamazoo. At the time, he was in Denver.
So what I'm hearing from both of you guys is that NXT prevailed in part one of this, in quotation marks, war.
I would say so.
From a content perspective, they're going to win the ratings war, I believe, tonight.
Really?
Yeah, there's no reason they shouldn't have a higher number than NXT tonight.
Oh, AEW. Okay, I misunderstood.
Yeah. Tony's right on that there's going to be more people tuning in because it's the number one. It's, you know, people are going to just want to see what's going on, and there's the people that are willing it to succeed. So AEW is going to win the numbers probably, but I think NXT put on the better show because AEW is still in that whole phase of throw everything at the wall and see what sticks. That definitely showed tonight.
Yeah, they're still trying to figure out who the hell they are. They're trying to find an identity. They don't quite have one yet. NXT, as Tony said, it's a well-oiled machine and knows exactly what it is at this particular point in time. AEW might have a little too many cooks in the kitchen. If I was AEW, I would probably, and I don't know anything, and I'm not chipping in no bread. I'm just speaking out of my ass here. I would probably give the book to the Rhodes boys and let them book this entire territory and see what happens.
Cody always, like, his matches are usually the best ones of the show so far. He seems to have that emotional connection. He seems to know how to tell a story. Cody seems like the only one with a clue. And I think DeMarco said that. I think you've said that, Platt. And I agree with you. So, fuck. Let it be, you know, Crockett all over again. Give the book to the Rhodes.
Give the book to the Rhodes, man. Yeah, I mean, shout out to the Young Bucks. They got themselves over. They sold a lot of t-shirts. But that's not a mainstream act, man. That act has, you know, that's not going to put butts in the seats. And Omega, as damn good of a wrestler as he is, he's corny as hell. And apparently, according to Andrew, he'll basically bang anything as long as it's Asian. Male, female, cat, dog, anime character, just, yeah.
Hey, I didn't say he was banging Riho. I just say they go way back. So I don't know. Maybe he might have been tagging with her when he was with Coda, and you never know. There could be. Maybe they'll bring Coda over at some point for just like a lover's quarrel.
Speaking of which, man, we're gonna switch gears here because there's a lot going on in WWE. But I did want to say, number one, shout out to my man Kota Ibushi and Kenta. They had a really good match on New Japan on Access this past weekend. That one in Tanahashi and Superman. PC Tunney's boy, that match was pretty good as well.
Oh, Saber.
Yeah. But what I heard about what happened at the New Japan show this weekend, and I've heard that there were a lot of interesting conspiracy theories about who made the call to, you know, cancel the ambulance. What were some of the conspiracy theories that you heard?
Some people thought it was WWE. Some people said AEW. Like, I don't know. Like, nobody had, like, one of those, we saw Bully Ray in the corner with the phone dialing in, blah, 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 blah. It's just, it's interesting because they would have to know exactly the company that Hammerstein uses for their shows to call them and somehow sound legitimate enough that New Japan was canceling, which not a lot of shows cancel Manhattan, you know, Center, Hammerstein Ballroom, whatever you want to call it. So that should have been questioned more.
That's so, okay. So for those that weren't aware, this past Saturday, New Japan ran a show at the Hammerstein Ballroom in New York, which was the old stomping grounds of ECW. Now, according to the laws in New York, in order to run a professional wrestling show, there has to be a standing ambulance. And I butcher that word all the time, but there has to be a standing ambulance at the arena before the show is even allowed to go on. So they obviously had already booked it. Showtime comes out and they're pushing the show back, thinking that the ambulance just hasn't got there yet. I don't know what they were thinking, but you know, and the show's pushed back. Finally, somebody in association with New Japan calls the ambulance company and they say, hey, where's the ambulance? We're trying to get the show on the road. Oh, well, y'all called and canceled. Oh, no, we didn't. So you know, and they eventually ended up working it out. I forgot how they ended up working it out because I think they tried to order an ambulance and all the ambulances were already booked for the rest of the evening. But they obviously the show ran. I remember hearing what they did. Do you remember, Andrew, what they did or what they worked out to be able to put on the show?
They had to work out something with a private company because what they were initially thinking of doing was just using like an FDNY ambulance. But because that's all state funded, you can't have that be, you know, focused on, like, I guess a private show or however that works exactly. It's all New York state law that they were kind of going into on why they couldn't use an FDNY ambulance to stand in until the other one came in. But I think they worked it out with the company that was supposed to be there, and it just took a while because New York traffic is fucking awful, which is why I refuse to drive in that state, or that city, I should say, and I just take the train up. So, yeah, it was a good 80 to 90 minutes, somewhere around there. But, you know, I felt bad. And I felt bad for two reasons. Number one, you had the assholes that make everybody look bad in any kind of subculture or sports fandom or whatever, who just start the obnoxious fucking chants of, you know, this is bullshit, we want wrestling, blah, 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 when you know something's obviously going on, so you could maybe shut the fuck up but not be an indignant piece of shit. And then the worst part of it is when the vice president comes out, little Asian man, doesn't speak English very well, he starts apologizing, looks like he's about to cry. The man prostrates himself in front of the crowd in the ring and just starts bowing to everybody, apologizing that there's nothing he could do and they're really trying. And then suddenly the chant becomes, it's okay. Like we didn't just hear you motherfuckers just say this is bullshit and we weren't wrestling. Now suddenly it's okay because then Rocky slides in the fucking ring and starts throwing out free T-shirts and fucking, you know, doing the way to placate the fucking morons. Like that got under my skin. Not the delay. The delay was tiring. The delay was annoying. But just dealing with fucking stupid ass motherfuckers that make us all look like inbred fucking knuckle dragging cavemen who don't know their fucking ass from a hole in the ground just is fucking disgusting.
America.
Yeah, basically.
Oh shit, so AEW is off now and it appears to be a movie starring Ed Harris, so I guess I can go ahead and turn that down.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, no, actually, I beg your pardon. This is The Rock. We're going to let that ride.
Oh, no, yeah, that's good. That's a good one.
So, okay, guys, I have to go take a piss, man. But before I get out of here, let me get you guys kind of final thoughts on the commencement of the Wednesday Night Wars. And I guess the main thing I want to ask both of you guys and have both of you guys chime in on is, what happens now?
Ooh, what happens now? Now that the first salvo has been shot, where do we go from here? Where do we come from? Where do we go? Where do we come from? Cotton Eye Joe kind of thing? I don't know. Tony, did you see any kind of like clear path on where we could see the fandom kind of separating or the IWC or the shows itself?
I mean, immediately where we go is the overreaction and overhating and overloving of what happened tonight on the Twitter and social media as far as the internet wrestling community goes. And we kind of mentioned that for this first, you know, 6 to 8 weeks, it's going to be, you know, a lot of over manipulation of what happened, where people are just going to manipulate how they want to feel about each brand and put their thoughts and feelings and project them into the things that, you know, you can make up stats to prove anything, right? 98% of all people mm-hmm. know that. But you can't really judge what's happened unless you go backwards and look at it. So it's really going to be hard to give this your best opinion or view or foresight until we get through this, because it is something completely different. You know, you talk about the old war, the old Monday Night Wars. That was a war between, I don't know, two evenly matched entities, where this is just not that whatsoever for me.
No, I agree with you there, because this is just a makeshift war. Like, the fans want it to be a war because it's on the same night. Like, by the same regard, I think we could say Impact and NWA are going to have a fucking war, because I think NWA is starting their fucking TV show at 6:05 on fucking Tuesdays now. Like, it's complete hyperbole. Like, just because it's on the same time, we've said it a few times when we were talking about both shows, NXT is established. It's a well-oiled machine. You've got a crowd. You've got a big machine behind it that knows what they're doing. AEW is kind of in that old TNA or the WCW 2000 kind of mentality. Not of sucking. Because if you think about it, if you ever watch the WCW 2000 Raw, like Nitros, without the kind of onus of, you know, it's all going downhill, the shows weren't that bad, but they were just throwing a lot at the wall and trying to see if it would stick. And TNA used to do that all the time, where you'd have some kind of weird dome and Jeff Hardy's flipping off of it. Then you'd have Monsters Ball match. Then you'd have knockouts tag team matches. Then you'd have a wedding. And then you'd have this, that, the other thing. So they've got to figure it out. And it's honestly, I don't think it's that big of an insult to kind of equate AEW episode one, season one, to WCW 2000, when you'd rather kind of be flailing about figuring your shit out in the beginning instead of at the end.
Fair enough, fair enough. So where you guys want to go next? You want to go two cucks and a baby, or do you want to talk about SmackDown premiere on Friday?
Oh, no, well, two cucks and a baby. It's got to be two cucks and a baby with that lead-in right there.
Yeah, we'll be after these messages, we'll be right back with two cucks and a baby.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Why should you visit thechairshot.com? Thechairshot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
All right, gentlemen. Platt, I'm just going to hand it right over to you. Obviously, you're talking about the close of Monday Night Raw.
Well, first and foremost, man, I thought Raw as a show altogether was damn good. Didn't really care for the Lacey Evans-Natalya match. I fast-forwarded through that. Sasha and Alexa, they've done better. But it started hot, and it ended hot, and it ended with, as Andrew so eloquently put before the show, with Lana joining Black.com. And I mean, hey man, I've been, say what you will about Bobby Lashley's time here in WWE part two, and Lord knows I've been critical of it. I mean, with his look and his legitimate background, that man should never sniff the middle card. But you gotta give WWE credit, or, well, I don't know if you give him credit. I just think it's interesting that Bobby Lashley has been involved in the two most talked about segments on Raw of the entire year.
What was the second one?
The one with the spot with him and Braun when they went through the Triton and all the sparks went off.
Oh, yep. Good point. Yeah, that's an interesting way to put it, that Lashley's at least getting his name out there and getting the clicks. But all right, real quick, before we go into, you know, two cucks and a baby, since we were talking about commentary a lot, I would like to really, as you like to say, give Lawler his flowers on this one, because Jerry kind of kept that whole fucking commentary team together and made them actually kind of enjoyable. Whatever the two, I don't even know everybody's name on the new grouping now, Dio Madden and whoever Tom Phillips, Michael Cole 3.0 is.
Vic Joseph, sir.
There we go. But, like, he just, they're a little bland, they're a little flat, and Lawler brought the energy up. Like, you know, he popped for things, like when Rey Mysterio's music hit initially. He's like, oh, are we getting the Universal title shot match, you know, title match right away? And then, no, Rey comes out in his clothes. But, like, that's something that you're supposed to do. You're supposed to get excited. You're supposed to kind of tell the story and hype the crowd at the same time. And the way he played off with Becky about the whole, oh, no, you promised me that you weren't going to get involved and sit down and all this stuff. And, like, Lawler actually was really, really good. And he was, like, the highlight of commentary for me. I don't know how you feel.
So before we commence with the cucks, yeah, I exactly. enjoyed the announced team. And I think the reason I enjoyed them is just because it was something different. I'm not mad at Tom Phillips. He did an admirable job. And the fact
you
that
mean
he
Vic
wasn't
Joseph,
whatever.
They're all fucking the same.
I thought he did a great job. It was nice not having to hear Cole go, it's boss time. And it was just a nice breath of fresh air. Dio didn't say a whole lot. Who is Dio, by the way? He looks like he should be wrestling. He's a big melon farmer.
I know he was announcing on 205 Live for a little bit. So essentially, the Raw commentary team is two-thirds of 205 Live and Jerry the King Lawler. Okay. So I don't know where he comes from exactly, but that's at least the last thing I know he's from in WWE.
All right, well, he's handsome. He looks good. He's, you know, he's tall as hell. He dressed nice. And he was articulate with the few things that he did say. But I, you know, there was a lot of criticism about them bringing back Jerry Lawler for Raw. And Andrew, I think you hit the nail on the head as to why you have Lawler there, because you have these two guys. I know Vic Joseph did the one Raw. Didn't he do a Raw a couple of weeks back? Something happened and Cole, I don't know. He did do a Raw, but you know, they're new to this, and you kind of want to have that veteran hand there to kind of guide the ship, to kind of smooth over and, you know, do the transitions. Basically the same thing that you said that Shivani was doing at AEW. I feel like Jerry Lawler did the same thing. And his shtick was fresh because we hadn't heard it much, or heard it much rather. And I mean, he's still one of the quickest guys in the game. He's legitimately funny. He's super quick. And I mean, Jerry Lawler is one of the best talkers in the history of the business. So it's good to have that nice, steady veteran hand there as the two other guys get their sea legs. So, yeah, I didn't mind the commentary as much as a lot of other people. The opening segment was hot as fish grease. Shout out to Dominic, who took hellacious bumps. I mean, golly, he took great bumps. And if this somehow leads to a Brock Lesnar, Rey Mysterio program, I'm all for it. I can smoke a bag of that, man. I can get down with that. Have you heard the rumors? And I mean, they came from Meltzer, so we're obviously going to take that with a grain of salt. But the rumors are that they're trying to set up a program with Brock Lesnar and Cain Velasquez.
I did not hear that rumor, because that seems weird, because I know he signed on with AAA, and I don't really know WWE to play well with AAA.
Well, so, according to Meltzer, and again, take that with a grain of salt. There actually was a meeting between Velasquez and WWE. So I'm not saying, I'm just saying. But either way, man, if it leads to a Brock and Ray feud, I'm cool with that. And it kind of gives me a little bit of hope that maybe Ray comes out and somehow costs Brock the WWE title match, and we can get a couple more days of Kofi. Maybe he can carry it until the Jam in the Sand or something like that. What else happened? The Ric Flair Hulk Hogan segment. Obviously, you know, y'all know my feelings about Hulk Hogan, but that shit was hot too, and the crowd was hot for it. They actually brought Hogan out in the perfect place, Arizona, where he was going to be universally cheered. You know, trust me, I lived in Arizona for years. I know how the people, I know how they get down. So of course, he was going to be universally cheered. Shout out to Rick too. I think they kind of threw him a bone. You know, he had the man lawsuit out there, but y'all know what that was. That was just a money grab. So they said, all right, we'll give you some of this Jam in the Sand money. You get to come out, you know, we'll give you a six-figure check or whatever the case may be, and we'll actually let you talk. Because that's all that was about. Number one, obviously he wanted some money or needed some money. I don't know his financial state. And number two, he probably missed being Ric Flair. So they let him get back out into the spotlight. They actually let him talk, which, you know, they're always very nervous to give him a live mic. And they sold the shit out of that 5-on-5 match, man. I'm interested in seeing it.
Don't get that twisted, though. You know what the biggest thing he got out of this lawsuit, aside from the check and the Jam and the Sand money, is, right? Please tell me you didn't overlook it. What's biggest that? Thing. He got another fucking title reign. His Titantron says 17-time champion now. Fuck you, John Cena.
Aha. Touche. So, yeah, that segment was really great. And anything else that I missed? You know, we know where we're going here, but is there anything else that that just needs to be talked about?
I mean, Randy Orton, that was probably one of my, like, he's been a really good with his promos since they're letting Twitter Randy Orton kind of come out a little more than just bland, you know, whatever, LRKO you, Randy Orton. When he said the whole get your head out of Hogan's ass kind of line. And then the way him and Corbin were acting like complete fucking children during the Lana Rusev thing.
Oh my God. Like, yes.
Like, it seems like they're actually friendly towards one another. And it's like, it seems like that's going to be good, because Orton was just laughing his ass off and having a good time. And he was able to say a little more colorful stuff than usual. So I like watching Orton when he's slightly motivated, because he's so good at what he does. And just, it comes so natural to him. He can just kind of half-ass everything and go through cruise control. But when he tries, it's a fucking gorgeous thing.
It's funny, because I feel like this year has been some of his best mic work, if not his best work ever.
Like that AJ Styles promo.
Yes, exactly. The stuff with Kobe. The stuff with Kobe. Kobe Kingston.
Kobe!
The stuff with Kofi Kingston, the stuff with AJ Styles, his promo that he cut on Raw this past Monday, the promo that him and Triple H cut before their match at Jam in the Sand. Like, he's been doing phenomenal mic work this whole year. And yeah, a dialed in, even if he's just slightly motivated, as you put it, Randy Orton is still one of the best in the business.
Oh, yeah. So, okay. So I guess we
and he's an asshole, but I just liked him. And he's a MAGA.
Some of the best people are assholes, though. Look at this podcast.
Touche. I just really like him. He seems like one of the guys, like, if I was in the locker room, I feel like him and I would hang out and probably just crack racial jokes on each other the whole time.
You probably would. Yeah. That's probably fair.
Yeah, that seems. But I've had friends like that before, so I feel like that would be the dynamics of our relationship.
all right. So we danced around the cuckening enough. So I guess let's just get to it. Now, I understand it's generated attention. Greg loves to just blast Twitter and everything with the fact that it was like the most viewed WWE video up until yesterday or something like that. But what the fuck with the redundancy on angles? Does everybody in WWE need to be like some kind of soy boy fucking beta cuck where they watch their wife make out with somebody and they just look? They just stare blankly at what's going on. Sorry, he blinked at one point and looked disappointed and then fucking stared longingly at Blocked.com or fucking Reality Kings. Or however you're going to fucking tag Bang that. Bang Bros, the Bang Bus. I don't know, but what the fuck? Like, what the fuck is this shit? Like, he just looked like such a punk bitch. Now, like I said, I get it. It's controversial. It's actually made people want to click on it. But when Rusev's the fucking Bulgarian brute motherfucker coming out on a tank and he's supposed to be able to beat the shit out of people and be taken seriously, and he just watches his wife make out with a dude, and like she got on him too, like fucking her leg was like all the way up on his fucking hip, and she was, there was tongue, like she was really getting into that, and he's just
I'll go back to the
again, like, what the fuck.
I'll go back to the age-old adage, you know, show me a super, super hot female, and I'll show you a guy who's sick of her shit.
Well, okay, a few things here, man. There's a lot to unpack. First off, did you notice that even Rusev's mustache was frowning? He's just...
The show right there. Even Rusev's mustache was frowning.
He just looked so lost, man. Like he just saw his puppy get ran over by a Nazi van or something. It was just, oh my God. His facials, Rusev's good. So a couple more things, man. So Lana, before she came to WWE, she was one of those, one of those part-time actress / model / part-time waitress. You know what I mean? One of them. She was an actress / model.
Don't we just call them escorts nowadays?
No, 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 no. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not. No, no, no. What
oh,
I'm saying.
Oh, you mean a legitimate one?
Or trying to be a legitimate one.
That's
why we threw in the part-time waitress line right there. You know what I mean?
I thought that was the whole premise for every casting couch video, so that's why I was just throwing that out there.
Number two, so you're just running with this porn angle, huh?
I kind of am at the moment. Yeah, it's amusing me.
Okay, well, then let's go with that, man, because one of the things people, you know, they critique WWE about is that they don't have their hands and fingers on the pulse, pun intended. But, I mean... Let's keep it a buck and a half here, man. We're three guys on this podcast, man.
The throbbing pulse.
Have you viewed pornography lately? I mean, literally, all it is incest and BBC cuckolds with guys who look strikingly similar to Bobby Lashley from All White Guys Think We All Look Alike side of the game. So that's pretty relevant, quite frankly, even if people don't want to admit it.
Well, it is relevant, yes. I don't disagree with that. And like I said, I understand why it got clicks and all that. But it's just back-to-back cucking angles? Like, isn't it a little too close? Like, what the fuck are they doing with this? Like, and Rusev, of all fucking people. It's not like Rusev is your stereotypical white guy. You could do that to, like, Drew Gulak or somebody else that fits your fucking stereotype. We're just like, oh, yeah, he looks like he's got a wife that needs somebody with a dick. Yeah, but, like, no, not Rusev. Rusev looks, he's a big boy. He's not, like, your stereotypical white guy. So, like, why him?
Drew Gulak, okay, the not so PowerPointer.
Yes.
Poor fella, man. Poor Drew. Shout out to Drew, man. I'm not even the biggest Drew fan, but damn, y'all just buried
his man for no reason. Four, his size 4 font. That's what it is. She needs some word art in her life.
What, she needs a new Roman Times 12-point font? Is that what she needs?
Oh, Ariel Black.
But yeah, and they did get into it. Like you said, she wrapped that leg around. Bobby went back in for seconds, and they even had fun with it and worked it on Twitter, too. Did you see the Bobby Lashley line talking about she tastes like strawberries and she threw the hearts back and whatnot? Like, they're going with it.
That. Okay.
Yeah, that happened, man. They're going with it. But, okay, so one thing I wanted to say that I've been thinking about it through this whole thing, and I haven't heard anybody else bring this up as of yet. Okay, so we've got the Mike Bennett or Mike Kanellis, Maria Kanellis thing. And now we've got the Rusev Lana thing, you know. Cuck. Now, if the... To quote Uncle Bruce, to paraphrase Uncle Bruce here, if the rumor and innuendo is to be believed, these are both two couples who allegedly had some issues with WWE in terms of their creative and their booking and whatnot, and may or may not have try to get released out of their contracts. So now all of a sudden you have these two couples that the rumors would let you believe had issues in WWE. Now all of a sudden they're on television, but they're both playing cuckold angles. That can't be a coincidence. Just like the Street Profits main eventing NXT this evening, gentlemen, that can't be a coincidence.
I see where you're putting the lines together, connecting the dots, Charlie from Sunny. Yeah. I see where you're going with it. Do you really think this is quote-unquote punishment? Like the whole, you tried to get out of it, so look, you're on TV, but here you're going to do what I want you to do kind of thing?
I don't want to say the word punishment. I guess for lack of a better term, I wouldn't necessarily use the word punishment. I would just say that that's an awfully big fucking coincidence. And it's hard for me to believe that this is all just coincidental. They're literally running the exact same angle. That's just, that's a bit of a stretch for me. There's got to be something
behind that. That's what Lana said.
Pop. There's got to be something behind that. There just has to be.
I mean, yeah, I like how you're putting that together, honestly, because it makes more sense than just them wanting to run the same or a similar angle with, you know, two couples. But
either that or we're getting a look into Paul Heyman's sexual perversions. Either way.
Yeah, this does. Yeah, these cucking things do kind of scream Paulie a bit, because ECW was cringy at points while trying to be edgy. So
allow me a volley, sir. Perhaps you should put your hip more into it as you thrust.
Thank you. Your opinions are always just fantastic. I like your conspiracy theory, though. I do. Because that makes a lot more sense than just a lack of creativity. So I'm willing to go with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just way too coincidental. And shout out to Rusev, man, who, since he came in as the Bulgarian Brood, he's going through the Rusev Day. He did the stuff with Aiden English, and now he's the sad, sorry, cuck guy. The guy actually has a lot of range as far as wrestling actors go. He's shown a lot of depth. So I hope they do find something to do with him. I think the match can be really good. Bobby Lashley seems to perform best when he's got another big brute to beat on. You know what I mean? I really enjoyed the feud with him and Strowman. Him and Roman didn't have a bad match. All their matches I enjoyed. And I think him and Rusev can lead to something similar. I wonder where this goes. And I got to be honest, I know it's your job. But if I'm a wrestler, especially knowing how these things work in wrestling, I would feel a little uncomfortable about my significant other kissing Lexington Steel and wrapping her leg around him. That would, I'm not saying, I'm just saying, man, because we kind of know how this works in wrestling. Sometimes, you know, you work yourself into a shoot, brother.
Well, you saw what Lance Storm tweeted, right?
No, what did he say?
I think
if I can be serious for a minute.
Well, paraphrasing, obviously, but he said he had a conversation with Macho Man Savage once about, you know, using your significant other in an angle. And he goes, I used my wife in an angle. I don't have a wife anymore.
Yeah. And I mean, if you, I don't know how much you guys have watched Total Divas, but it came out during Total Divas that Lana did previously bang the Old Spice guy. So we know she's into the brothers. I'm not saying, I'm just saying.
I know that because I don't watch Total Divas at all. But all right, there we go.
Do you remember who I'm talking about? Because I don't
do know the look at your man look over here. Look back at that guy. Yeah, that guy.
Mm-hmm. That guy. Yeah, they had a thing back in the day because that was an angle that they ran on the show. I guess Lana was out at her bachelor party. The girls that took her to her, I think, to her bachelor party, and he happened to be at the club. And Rusev was kind of like, ugh, so he showed up, you know, as well he should, you know.
I wonder if that's where they actually got the inspiration from. And they'd be like, wait, hold on. She likes black guys. We've got a black guy. Bang him. What?
Well, if I can be serious for a minute, they all like they don't let them fool you. They all like black guys.
You know what I mean.
I know what you mean. And what you said was funny. It was. I'm not going to lie. That was funny. I chuckled. I laughed. But yeah, man, there's just, yeah, there's two. Come on, man. That, I mean, it's literally the exact same angle. The only difference is, well, I guess there is no difference. Because I was going to say, at least Rusev doesn't look like a bitch. But, you know.
He looked like a bitch.
But shout out to the season premiere of Raw. It was a good show. It was entertaining. It was spontaneous. We got two hot angles coming out of it. And yeah, man, this has been a great week for wrestling so far. And we've only just begun.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Brock Lesnar!
Before we get to Brock Lesnar, give me you guys' thoughts on WWE finally locking it down, making the announcement that the Great One will return to his show. The season premiere of SmackDown on Fox will definitely involve the one, the only, Dwayne Johnson.
It had to be done, didn't it?
I agree. I was kind of on that same level where it only seems right. The show was named after him. He should be there on the Fox premiere. So,
where does he come out in this show? Is he open this show? Does he close this show? Is he the middle hour, the 9 p.m. Eastern hour opener there? What do you do? You're booking The Rock. He's on the show. What do you do?
Ooh, I'd have him close the show. But I'd kind of give you the him walking out of the limo at a different point, or maybe him dabbing up with Roman or something like that in the lead-in to kind of remind people and build up to when he comes out. But I'd have him close it like Stone Cold closed the last big get-together one, because everybody seemed to love Stone Cold having the beer bash and, you know, saying his piece for 5 minutes. Give Rock 5-10 minutes and people go home happy too.
I like the idea of him closing because it keeps you there. Like, even if you're not a wrestling fan, you're going to keep it on there just to see The Rock. Like, he brings in people that aren't even wrestling fans. That's just how big he is. But he might be on this Cena shit right now, too, though. You know how when they bring Cena
in
out.
In and out real quick?
Yeah, in and out real quick. So, you know, we get it over at the beginning of the show because he got shit to do.
Hey, like they always say, if you're not closing the show, where do you want to be? Opening the show. So I think with them having that title match to rely on, the real reason people are watching, they want to find out if Brock's actually going to take that title from Kofi. I think you're going to have people tuning in through the end of the show. It's Friday night. They're going to want to see if Brock takes that title from Kofi. I got The Rock opening the show. You get your opening montage. You get the shot of the arena. And then you get, if you smell! And I won't even keep going.
It's funny, you know, Amber was, her and I were talking a few days ago as I was setting up SmackDown on the DVR because I won't be able to watch it live, again, rent over wrestling. And she said, well, you know, typically isn't Friday the dead spot for, Friday night the dead spot for television? And I told her, yeah, typically it is, but the thing is, WWE's, the average current WWE viewers in their 50s, so it's not like they're going to be out kicking it on a Friday night anyway, and now they've got something to watch.
True, Points, points. Plus, what? Didn't they run the clip show or something like that last week as a lead-in to SmackDown coming to Fox? And it still did, like, what, 1.4 million? Or around the same number that NXT did on USA, which, that's not bad for a random clip show that didn't really have any kind of lead-up on a Friday.
That is pretty good. And I'm looking at this, man, kind of in a bigger picture sense, too, man. This move by Fox to bring wrestling on Friday nights, because TV is changing. And, you know, one of the reasons, or the reason, that all these sports leagues keep getting gazillions of dollars worth of, you know, television deals, or signing these gazillion-dollar television deals, is because it's live programming. And it's DVR proof, because people want to see the show live. So it's the only thing out there that's DVR proof, which is, you know, that's obviously attracted to advertisers, because they're going to have a live captive audience when they show their advertisements, which is also one of the reasons why they stretch out these games and they're lasting longer than they ever have now, because they're trying to get as many ad dollars in there as they possibly can while they have a captive audience. But yeah, sports is DVR proof, and to a lesser extent, award shows are as well, because people like to follow along live with award shows and be part of the conversations. They can put their two cents in on social media and, you know what the rest of the world is talking about. So with everybody and their mama starting streaming services, gentlemen, we might be looking at the future of television right now with this, which, especially network television, which, okay, they've got a streaming service, they've got a streaming service, but if you want to see live programming and content, then you need to turn into television, and especially specifically network television. So this is going to be very interesting to see what happens, because if SmackDown hits on Fox and if AEW hits on TNT, I mean, could you guys imagine if MLW or Impact actually had a budget? I mean, holy smokes. And, you know, in a weird sort of way, professional wrestling historically, when it comes to television, it's in a weird way kind of been a catalyst, so to speak. So, for example, when TV first got popping, you know, in the early 1950s, television was one of the first things on there. And everything, or excuse me, professional wrestling was one of the first things on television. And, you know, one of the things about pro wrestling, I mean, episodic TV, character development, building towards big reveals and angles, these are things that are still within the DNA of every single show that we watch till this day. And then if you want to fast forward a little bit to the 80s, professional wrestling was one of the first outlets to really understand how the pay-per-view model worked and took advantage of that. You fast forward a little bit to the 90s, where the product got a little more raunchy and a little more edgy, and those effects are still being felt on television till this day. I mean, you can turn on a reality TV show and, you know, you see two pretty women in dresses getting drunk and fighting each other. Like, you know, that has its seeds in professional wrestling. And even as I talked about earlier, man, about these streaming services that are popping up and everybody has them, hell, WWE and even New Japan, they were ahead of the curve on that, and they saw where where everything was going, and they were kind of ahead of the curve. So wrestling in a weird way has kind of been a catalyst for how things work on television. And, you know, I said all that to say, that's why I'm so fascinated to see how this Fox on SmackDown thing is going to play itself out.
Those are all really good points. I agree with you on everything.
That's why they call me the MVP, baby. Every now and again, I pull some smart shit out my ass. It ain't just white jokes and
well, the white jokes are fucking funny, but that smart shit hits home too nicely. I like it.
So, yeah, I'm excited to see where this goes, man. This is a very interesting time in the business. And, you know, I've waffled and flip-flopped back and forth, man, on air and in my head, as to whether or not we're on the precipice of a boom. I don't know we're on the precipice of a boom. Again, all it takes is one hot angle, but I know we're on the precipice of a change at the very least. And I mean, you know, the network numbers, network television numbers, and television numbers in general are dwindling. So if SmackDown can do Raw numbers, I gotta imagine, especially on a Friday night, that's a success. And Fox clearly wants this thing to work, because they've been going overtime in regards to promoting it. So do you all think that they would be satisfied with Raw numbers, or do you think that would be a disappointment?
I mean, normal SmackDown numbers when it was on USA was only like 1.5, 1.6, or possibly even slightly less than that, which is about a million less than Raw numbers. So I think anything that's around where NXT came in at for that first week and a little bit above, I think that's all gravy.
Oh, no, this first week, man, they're going to do 2 or 3 million. I wouldn't be surprised if they hit 4, but they're going to at least do 2 or 3 million.
Yeah, they'll have a big number this opening week for sure. I don't think that necessarily really matters what their number is going to be, potentially, but it's going to be bigger than NXT and AEW on Wednesday, that's for sure.
Now, I'm not just going forward. Obviously, we all agree that they're going to pop a big number, you know, coming out the gates, but...
Oh, yeah, overall, going forward, I think it's going to be between 1.5 and 2.
Okay.
Right, when what I meant was going forward, they will consistently, and probably every week, have a bigger number than AEW and NXT.
You think so? Even though AEW is going to get pushed hard, you don't think AEW is going to beat SmackDown?
It's network television, man, and believe it or not everybody has cable.
AEW is going to gradually walk themselves down in ratings until they hit that lower level plateau where those fans are going to be consistently tuning in. And then we'll see what they're really made of at that point. And don't get me wrong, all the stuff that I've said in a negative light or kind of pasted it as something that was built into their first week, they did a good job. They're on the right track. It's just going to take a lot more time than people think.
Oh, it's the same thing that happened with TNA. And TNA was available to many less homes. But, you know, they popped like the big 1.2 or 1.3 when Hogan had his first night there in the, you know, Hogan and Bischoff era. And then it kind of dwindled down to like the 700,000 to 800,000 kind of people thing. But yeah, and I get what you're saying.
And I'm not thinking about just people that can't afford cable. I mean, SmackDown will now be accessible to the cord cutters as well. And it's not going to take a whole lot of maneuvering to be able to watch the show.
You did hear, though, that think it's Dish dropped Fox, though, right?
What?
Oh, you didn't hear that one. When I say it was Dish Network or DirecTV, one of those.
It's one of those, though.
Oh, Fox, like it dropped Fox FS1, because during football, any game that was on football was, any game that was on Fox was just taking the piss out of Dish and just being like, even though you can't watch it here, like go to NFL.com and live stream it here, you know, blah, 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 blah. Like they were kind of really railing on, I want to say it's Dish.
It's not DirecTV.
Which one of them has a bug up their ass about WWE and they're always going back and forth? Is that Dish or Direct? I can't remember. Y'all know what I'm talking about?
I don't know what you're talking about, but it's not DirecTV, I'll tell you that.
Okay, because there was one when the network first popped off. One of the satellite providers stopped carrying WWE pay-per-views because they were throwing a bitch fit about the network.
Oh, it was probably Dish.
Okay, because then I know that's not the only thing. I know historically there's always been some friction between WWE and one of the Dish providers. You know, if I'm satellite, I'm just happy people got satellite, man. I mean, hell, it starts drizzling and then you can't even watch your damn TV. Like, y'all just need to be easy. You got to relax, man.
Oh, yeah.
So, last thoughts, man, about SmackDown. What are you looking forward to most? Just whatever, man. Whatever you want to say about SmackDown, man. Just say some shit. Just talk.
I'm just honestly curious how the whole Brock Lesnar thing is going to go, because I don't see Lesnar... See, it's weird because we all think Lesnar's going to win, but why would Lesnar win when that means Heyman has to go to SmackDown too when he's supposed to be like the executive producer of Raw? So doesn't it make more sense to keep Lesnar on Raw with Heyman instead of having Heyman travel back and forth? I don't know. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's something going on, but I am most interested in seeing what happens with Brock and Kofi. And after that, I don't know. It's not interesting after that, honestly.
I don't think Heyman cares. I mean, Heyman lives and breathes wrestling, so I don't think he cares if he's got to be on Monday and then, you know, fly out to wherever they're doing Friday. Plus, it would get kind of weird having Brock on Raw, knowing what we know about Paul Heyman's role backstage. That's kind of weird. You know, if he's on SmackDown, it just gets to be Brock and Heyman. And, I mean, how much is Brock really going to be on SmackDown anyway?
Hey,
that's a good question, too.
There is a draft coming up, so none of this is set in stone.
Touche.
So you think if Brock wins, they might draft the WWE over to Raw?
I don't think Brock wins.
But do you think they'd ever draft the two main titles to the other brand?
No, but they can always flip flop them.
No, I'm just saying.
That's what I would say.
Like Universal on SmackDown at any point?
Right, they could flip flop them if they wanted to. Sure, why not?
Does it turn blue if it's on SmackDown?
Oh, that's what she said.
Hey.
Blue Chew, man. Y'all, we got to get our numbers up, man. We got to start doing some Blue Chew spots.
We really do.
Yeah, we got to get our numbers
up. Please, it's all there. Listen. It's too easy.
It's way too easy. Please listen. Please, y'all. Please tune
especially
in.
Especially with all these cucking angles and all this porn talk.
Yeah, what the cuck?
What the cuck?
What the cuck? It's a natural fit. So, gentlemen, believe it or not, there's a pay-per-view this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, that's going to happen. we don't know the card, man. We're going to wrap this up shortly, though. I did want to talk about the two main matches that we do know of, which is one Seth Rollins versus The Fiend for the belt and Becky Lynch versus Sasha Banks, which are both going to be in the Cell.
Yeah. If Fiend doesn't win that, I don't know what the fuck is going on because you pushed him quick, too early for my liking, but he's there. You give him the fucking belt, and we see where it goes, because he's the biggest thing you got at the moment. And why else would you bring Sasha back if you weren't going to give her a title run?
I agree with both of those statements. You can't kill The Fiend. Him losing would kill him. And I still think Becky's going to end up on the blue brand. So, yeah, let Sasha have the Raw belt, and then she can go over there and play with Sasha and Bayley. And Bobby Lashley, apparently.
Tony, any difference?
If you think The Fiend's going to win the title on Sunday, you probably won't see any other title changes. So, you know, kind of take that into effect. Also, the other thing before we wrap up here, just going backwards real quickly, is Paul Heyman did give out the spoiler alert for this Friday on SmackDown, which hasn't been wrong yet.
Whoa, ho, 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 putting on a fresh coat of paint, putting on a fresh coat of paint, doom, doom, putting on a fresh coat of paint. I'm keeping the power of positivity, baby, P.O.P., holding it down. Come on, Kof.
No, I ain't got it.
Ah, boy.
Anywho, Mr. Blast, man, if there's nothing else you wanted to, you're just pertinent and pressing to say, why don't you let the good folks know where they can find you?
No, I got my little rant about the whole New Japan thing out of the way. Thank you. Got that done earlier. So you can just find me on the Twitter at IWC Warchief. And, you know, I write a bunch of reviews and stuff for thechairshot.com. You can find a whole bunch of my shit with my name plastered right in the beginning of it, so you know it's mine.
So you all can find me on the Twitter at TheRealCPlat. And all I can think about is how insufferable we would have been had we had social media during the Monday Night Wars. But the wrestlers themselves would have been so cool because, you know, they all would have been sniping back and forth. You know what I mean? Just, you know, just working us and getting us all into a frenzy. So that would have been cool. But yeah, again, I'm on Twitter at The Real C Plat. But more importantly than that, man, if you enjoy the content that we provide for you day in and day out, we've got some new shows coming down the pipe. We've got articles. Hell, I might even write again. Who knows? The sun will come up tomorrow. You never know. But show us some love, all right? Go to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot and pick up an official chair shot t-shirt. Hey, get two, man. Just make sure that we can continue to provide this quality content that we do to you day in and day out. Thechairshot.com. Remember, it's not just a website. It's a movement, folks. Mr. Tunney, where can they find you?
You can always find me at PC Tunney on the Twitter and, of course, on the DWI podcast, which... there should be another new episode. That'll make 3 weeks in a row right here on Pod of War. And we're going to have a meeting tomorrow, or at least I'm going to text with Greg a little bit and see what we're going to do with these old chair shot staff picks since WWE decided to screw me over with this Friday Night SmackDown kind of bullshit.
And in between everything that Mr. Tunney just announced that he had on his plate, he's also going to be Googling Bobby Lashley cuck videos. So his weekend is pretty filled up, folks.
That's not true.
Yeah, it's not true. His weekend isn't filled up. That's why he's going to be looking up for Bobby Lashley cuck videos.
That's only going to take a couple minutes. We're good. Come on. He's got other stuff to do.
Well, the weekend lasts 2 days, balls.
Yes, but the flesh is weak. things get sore after a while.
That's what she said. Talking about Florida. Bringing it full circle. For Andrew Snowflake Blast, for the Commissioner PC Tutty, I'm Christopher Platt. Thanks for joining us this week. Folks, buckle up. It's going to be a bumpy ride. As the great Jim Ross said, in the wild, wonderful, wacky, weird world of wrestling, business has indeed just picked up. Hit it, Carly.
Strategically dipped below one eye. Your scar.